And a very good day to you fine folks. Adam here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, thanking you once again for listening. And as usual, when I sit in this chair and invade the microphone and sound waves of the great planet we live in, your ears and brain cells and certainly your funny bone will be very thankful. And you've picked a good time to listen because we welcome the return after a very, very short absence of Dr. Ron L. Feinman, our official presidentologist, political commentator, progressive professor, and all-around interesting dude. So, Ron, how is the early part of spring 2023 treating you so far?
It's doing all right. After coming back from my trip in Las Vegas and the Grand Canyon, where unfortunately I got laryngitis.
Laryngitis. Well, I think when we went to the Grand Canyon, or maybe I was watching it on the Brady Bunch, people talked and they wanted to hear their echo. So I guess with laryngitis, that would probably interfere with that ability, wouldn't it? Did you get rich and win millions of dollars on the slot machines, or how did that go in Vegas?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not a gambler and I'm not a drinker. I went to see, the famous hotels there, see some shows, and also go to see the Grand Canyon and Hoover Dam. So it was all right, but I wouldn't call it one of my most favorite trips. I'm not impressed by Las Vegas, the city itself.
You didn't.
It's definitely not a high on my list of cities, no.
Did you see the showgirls or do anything that would be fun in that regard?
I'm too old for that.
Don't go for that.
I did. No, okay. I'm too old for that.
So you just stuck to drinking coffee and cola and iced tea and no one-armed bandits or anything else. Got to like the desert weather, though. Definitely a different climate than we have in the Midwest or you have there in the tropical southern Florida area.
Yeah, but one thing I have to say, the hotels are humongous. I've never seen such tall and massive hotels. And it seems like they're a block away, but it's like a mile or more between each. It's really difficult. The way it's all set up, the Las Vegas Boulevard, I think is crazy the way it is. So, and the hotel was not good, unfortunately. It was, I think, the worst hotel I've ever been in as far as the conditions of the hotel. I enjoy going. I'm glad I saw the Grand Canyon, and it was an amazing sight. And I was just, thinking about how wonderful it was to be able to see this. But as far as the trip itself, I did get laryngitis. I did get sick. My friend got sick. And, I wouldn't call it high on my list of favorite places. I would not go back.
Sometimes just getting back to good old reliable home sweet home is the fun thing to do. And we know you love
I love being home.
Yeah.
I
love to teach. Love to write your blog.
It's also nice to get away.
And History News Network and all the other things that you do. Ron is the author of The Progressive Professor.com, a blog that I encourage you to read daily. It will take you 2-3 minutes to read in most cases. You may not agree with what is said, or you might find it's not really as politically slanted, just touches on history, which is always a fascinating.
Like Ulysses S. Grant this past week, that he got arrested.
Yes. We'll bring that up. And, many things to talk about. Ron certainly leans to the left. Me, it's kind of hard to tell. I'm certainly independent, probably average out as moderate, but we do agree on many things. And if we don't, we have a laugh about it because laughter is the best medicine. And the world is so messed up right now. If you don't laugh, I mean, what possible good is there even getting up in the morning? Got to laugh and realize it's the best medicine. And hopefully we can come together and learn from our mistakes and controversy and struggles and stress and come out all the better, all the wiser, and all the healthier. So you had that vacation, Ron. You're back in the swing of things, and not surprisingly, lots of controversy going on in the United States of America and the whole world.
Yes.
The so-called arrest or imminent arrest, Ron, of Donald J. Trump. Was it a publicity stunt where Donald just wanted to get money and get notoriety as he probably runs
exactly
for president again? Or is he really going to be, are they really going to come to wherever he's staying right now? I guess it's not too far from you in Florida. And handcuff him and take him over to the nearest Huskow, as they call it. What is going on? Is it just a publicity stunt, or is there really a risk that he might be sitting behind bars for quite a while?
It's a publicity stunt on his part to raise money. He keeps on fooling people, keep on sending him money. He might be arrested, but it would not be putting him in jail. It's only after a conviction that would happen. So it's just his usual dramatics, and it shows how mentally disturbed the man is and how dangerous he is. for the thought that he could be president again. It should not be allowed to become president. They could do that with, you know, with 14th Amendment Section 3. They only would do it, you know, to say that he cannot because of being involved in an insurrection, which is part of 14th Amendment. But, of course, the House Republicans have the majority by a few seats, and they'll never let that happen. So we're in danger in next year's election.
So we shall see what happens. And, you know, publicity stunts aren't necessarily a bad thing. It certainly gets people on the map, gets them noticed. And Donald Trump, I mean, since he came out of the womb, I think he has thrived on publicity, good or bad, a little bit of controversy. I mean, he is a character. And we like the fact, you know, I think you agree, Ron, he tells it like it is. He's very street smart. You know what you're getting from the guy. It's, are you getting someone who really should be sitting in the Oval Office? I think that's something we can agree upon, regardless of what you think about Donald. He is a character. I mean, I know you like Joe Biden, Ron, but he is a little boring. And Donald Trump is anything.
That's actually good.
Yeah.
That's actually good, I think. That
yeah.
Because he's a decent man with compassion and empathy, and Donald Trump has none of that. And neither does Ron DeSantis. These are nasty people, mean-spirited people, and that is not what the future should be. We need somebody on the Republican side who's a decent, humane, compassionate person. And one of the people could have been Larry Hogan is bowed out. And that's very upsetting because I think Larry Hogan would have been a good choice.
But Donald is a character, and if nothing else, he does encourage people to follow politics, follow history, which makes people like yourself even ever the more valuable. Whether or not you like the guy or not. I mean, he certainly is a character. He has charisma. Whether it's good charisma, that's a different matter. I mean, Obama and Clinton, both Roosevelts, Nixon, I mean, looking at multiple parties, they certainly had charisma. And whether it's good or bad, well, that's another matter altogether. I think Nixon's charisma.
The problem is he encourages extremists. You know, like the ones who caused the insurrection. So that makes him dangerous and makes them dangerous. He stirs people up to get involved in violent actions. That's horrifying.
Yeah, I think maybe that was part of the issue with Reagan transitioning to Bush number one. Politically, they weren't overly different. Maybe Reagan a little more conservative. But Bush number one, not really the most exciting or charismatic person in the world. Reagan, you know, very charismatic. I mean, he was an actor. Which can be good or bad. I mean, like Donald Trump, a show business president of sorts. You know, neither of us are overly thrilled with his politics, but he certainly was funny. He encouraged people to follow what he had to say, and never really a dull moment with the guy. And he was a good leader. It's just how he led. That's another issue, and we probably would agree on many of those issues. He was much less than satisfactory. And then transitioning to Bush number one, he didn't really have the charisma, and that caused him to only have the one term. And maybe the same thing with Gerald Ford. I mean, a good man, someone we have revered more after his passing. I mean, we liked his wife also. I mean, he was a football player.
Gerald Ford is still, I think, the best Republican president as far as a human being in modern times.
He was a football player for the big OSU rival, U of M. Again, his wife and her legacy has done so much to help counteract the serious drug problem that we have, certainly in mid and central Ohio, but all over the world right now. But maybe that was kind of part of why both of those presidents didn't get a reelection. We long for somebody who has charisma, someone who is a character, even if you don't necessarily agree with what he or she might have to say, and that's a lot of Donald Trump's charm. It's just, should someone like that be in the Oval Office? And as you've written recently, you feel he's quite dangerous. He is a danger to the United States, to the world, and maybe even to himself. And of course, we could spend a week's worth of shows discussing that, and we'll touch on that a bit in this program.
Yeah, I wanted to intervene to say about President Ford you mentioned. I want to mention about President Carter, who is in hospice as we speak. It's been more than a month now. And learning that Joe Biden has been asked to give his eulogy when he passes away. And that reminds me that Jimmy Carter gave the eulogy for Gerald Ford, and that was arranged between them. So I think this is something that makes those three compared, that none of them are charismatic particularly, but they're all such decent, humane human beings. That's the thing that makes me like Biden, Carter, and Ford.
Yeah, with Carter, a lot of it was, again, I bring this up again, was his family. I mean, Amy Carter, she just was seemed visible. I mean, I don't know, was it her glasses? Was it that she seemed real intelligent, or that she went to a public school in D.C., which was
she's in her 50s now.
which wasn't common for a president. Of course, I talk about my love for his brother, Billy. We've kind of beaten that into the ground. But you and I both, you know, find him to be a character and a good businessman and a funny guy. He charged Republicans more for gas than Democrats. I mean, I don't think that's a good, that's a fair thing as a businessman, but I think it was amusing. And talk about how bad that beer that he, that was branded with his name was. And I didn't drink beer when it came out because I was just a tot. But my understanding is that beer wasn't very good and didn't really last. But the idea was good. And again, we love Rosalind. She's still with us. And the late Lillian, his mother, another character. So sometimes I think in that case...
I wonder how long she'll survive him. You know, usually when couples are married, as long as they are 76 plus years, or even fewer than that, it's not likely that his wife will survive him by much, sadly.
Wish her the best, but we know that the Bush number one husband and wife passed away very close to each other. And
7.5 months.
Yeah, and it's sad. We both love Barbara Bush. Very, very middle of the road, if not liberal Republican. She didn't agree with her husband on a lot of things, and kind of glamorous with her white hair and her pearls, and she spoke really well. So certainly she, along with Betty Ford, and Michelle Obama, she has really increased my liking of her of late. But that often happens after someone leaves office. So some of our favorite recent first ladies, and I think in our lifetime, Ron, the role of the first lady, there isn't really an official job or set of duties, but the first ladies have become more visible. We've of course brought up Melania Trump many times, and we agree she's easy on the eyes, but what is her value beyond that? She does speak several languages, and sometimes we think that's several more than her husband speaks, but that's the Trump family for you. As we said, always a cast of characters. Love them or hate them, they certainly have charisma and personality and whatever else. Jill Biden, with a doctorate degree, she has done her professoring, even though she's been in high office and visibility. So nothing else. Respect her intelligence. You know, her political views, that's a different matter. Ron and I may not agree on that, but we certainly respect her intelligence, and she's not bad looking either. We'll just put that out there. I think, you know, the looks aren't a big deal, Ron, but the first lady, it's almost like the royal family in the UK. They're public figures, and they should be kind of glamorous and just reflect on the United States well. I think that, you know, that Barbara Bush kind of did that with, as I said, her very classy, mature looks. And each first lady has a bit of a set of characteristics and aspects to her personality, which we tend to remember. Maybe it is a way to diffuse some of the tension and stress and issues we have with the country right now. We just kind of look at the first lady. But I think that role, as we can certainly agree, has increased quite a bit in both of our lifetimes. So bottom line is, Ron, with the Donald Trump so-called arrest, it's a publicity stunt, which probably has helped a lot of the people that are big supporters of Donald Trump, but those who aren't, it may have, to put it mildly, decreased their opinion of the gentleman. And we will, bottom line is, we'll just see what's going to happen. Now, Ron, in your blog...
I just want to say about the royal family. I think since Queen Elizabeth passed away, the royal family image has declined dramatically. I don't think Charles and his wife come across very well at all. That's just my impression.
Yeah, they don't seem to have the glamour, do they? And all the controversy with Prince Harry, that isn't helping. Isn't helping one bit. But again,
it's hard to replace Queen Elizabeth. It's impossible to replace her, really.
yeah. I don't see that ever happening. And we shall see. It's always a surprise. And if you think you figured out all that's going to happen, or that we're out of surprises, sure enough, a curve is thrown, and something else will surprise you. That's kind of how life goes.
Yes.
So, as I mentioned, Ron, in your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, you've written probably the last week, most of your blogs have been about the Donald Trump and the danger that you feel that he is. This arrest, is it going to happen? And his supporters, the MAGA Republicans and other things that they might go by. I mean, what is the bottom line here, and how is this going to affect the landscape of our upcoming 2024 presidential election, preceded, of course, by the primary? And how does it also affect what we expect the hopeful presidential campaign of your current governor, Mr. Ron DeSantis? And how does that all kind of go together?
Well, at this point, Donald Trump seems, according to polls, although polls change, to be way ahead of Ron DeSantis, and nobody else is even in the picture. All these others, including Nikki Haley and Mike Pence and Mike Pompeo and everybody else. And it's very alarming because I think Trump would be a danger to the whole nation if he won again. But Ron DeSantis, with what he's doing in the state of Florida, he's destroying all kinds of the sense of unity by his legislation and by his dictatorial legislature passing crazy laws, you know, that are out of control. And I think he's actually scary more because he's smarter than Trump. So I'm really downcast about the fact of the future, and I'm worried about the Democrats because Joe Biden, I do admire him a lot. I think he's done quite well. But honestly, I do not think he should run for a second term, but it looks like he's about to announce. And, you know, I really think there should be a new generation of leadership, ideally, but it looks like it's not going to happen. So I think the country's in crisis as far as who's going to lead us in the next 4 years after the presidential election of 2024.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of your opinion of him, I'm not comfortable with a president who's in his early 80s and entering another presidential term, whether or not Joe Biden has early stages of a dementia or Alzheimer's type condition. That's up for debate, certainly. But I think there really does come a time, and we've had presidents in their 70s, and now we're having presidents in their 80s, and it seems like they're getting older and older. Now people are living longer.
We need a new generation.
Yeah, but
we need a new generation.
And again, with DeSantis, regardless of how you feel about him, and you like his name, but other than that, you're not a fan. He is young. He's in his 40s. He seems very healthy, and he has two Ivy League degrees. He's very intelligent. Of course, that could be a bad thing in terms of how dangerous he might be perceived as.
Yes.
But certainly, the age is good. I mean, goodness sakes, he's quite a bit younger than I am. That's a little scary, isn't it?
Well, and he would be one of the youngest presidents we've had, along with John F. Kennedy, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama. Yes.
But that aspect of him is good. It's just his viewpoints, and he's not afraid. He's not afraid to flip the switch on a policy which he and his cohorts feel is a good one, and not going to really touch too much on that, but the man certainly is a strong leader in Florida, love him or hate him. He certainly doesn't just sit idly at his desk. He does do things, and as president he would likely be the same way. Also,
he's been said to not have charisma. I don't think he really has charisma, and he comes across in a very nasty, arrogant way. The way he speaks and the way his face moves. If you really watch him, he's someone who would not unify the country. He has no compassion or empathy. I see none in. And years ago, he was a high school teacher for 1 year, and he was arguing that slavery was not a major factor in the Civil War. And his own students challenged him back 20 years ago. And I'm thinking, a guy who went to Yale and Harvard, and he's saying this 20 years ago? He's living in the past. He's living in an old theory about the Civil War. And that's why he's not allowing a black, you know, African-American studies AP course, which is outrageous, and why he's saying, don't say gay. You can't, if he wants to stretch all through high school, you can't have any discussion about gay or anything all the way through high school. That's going to cause a major problem for the state of Florida, and it's going to add to its negative reputation, which it already has. And also other things he's done. He's really off the wall. I think he's a combination of George Wallace, you know who George Wallace was, and Anita Bryant, and Neville Chamberlain. How's that? I haven't written that in one article.
That's quite a combination.
Because Neville Chamberlain, with the issue of giving in to Hitler, he suddenly is changing his story about Russia, but he first sounded like he didn't care what happened to Ukraine. So I think he's a combination of Anita Bryant, anti-gay, from way back, and George Wallace, and also Neville Chamberlain. I got to write an article saying that.
Adam here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, shooting the breeze, but on some rather serious topics with our official historian, commentator, and as I say, presidentologist, Dr. Ronald L. Fineman, live from his domicile in Boca Raton, Florida, where there's been quite a bit of controversy in the Sunshine State. The governor, who we think probably wants to be president, I think he will be president, but we'll find out, Mr. Ron DeSantis. Again, Ron likes his first name, but that's about all he likes about him. Although we do like that he's educated, a good age, and certainly very smart, but that could also go the other way. Getting closer to your home there, Ron, in Florida, you wrote in your blog a week or so ago, outrage over Palm Beach Atlantic University English professor fired over, quote, racial justice in syllabus. So this is a professor, Sam Jokel, if that's the right pronunciation, taught at the school for 21 years, no issues or problems, but suddenly there are a lot of problems. So tell us what happened there and what's your opinion? And again, since you're a liberal arts professor, I mean, you're kind of semi-retired, but you certainly know many other liberal arts history, humanities professors, and we've kind of talked about this before, but recapitulate. Do any of them feel that they might be given a pink slip because of their views, and are they considering maybe switching careers because they aren't really thrilled about what's going on in the Sunshine State right now?
Yeah, well, understand, Palm Beach Atlantic is a private Christian university. It is not a public university like where I teach, Florida Atlantic. This is Palm Beach Atlantic. I do not know this gentleman, but he has been an English professor there for 21 years, and part of his curriculum is discussing the subject of racial justice. And apparently one parent, and these are college students who are adults, so parents shouldn't have any say, one parent complained about the fact of racial justice being part of his curriculum, which has been for at least 12 years, and no problems. He's had no complaints from students or anything except for this one parent, who, and apparently the Board of Trustees there is more concerned about that than about the idea that you need to have discussion of all issues at a university. So they fired him, and I hope he gets a big lawsuit and wins a lot of money from them, because it's outrageous. And I wanted to mention that in the state of Florida now, in the field of English or social sciences or even math and other things, the state is interfering with the curriculum, and they're telling teachers you can't do this, you can't have books in your room that on subjects like sexual orientation or race or things like that. You can, and they're trying to ban books in libraries, school libraries and public libraries. And basically, we have been told on the college level, public university level, that is, that we cannot talk about certain things. But I've made it clear, not to my students, I don't say it, but I teach my class the way I've always taught it. I've taught for 51 years. I want to continue to teach. I don't need to teach in the sense that I'm going to be in desperate circumstances if I don't. But I like to still teach, but I am not caving in to any changes. I'm going to still talk about the Japanese-American internments in World War II, the Chinese Exclusion Act, about what happened to Native Americans under Jackson, about racial segregation and slavery. And I tell it both sides. I talk the good and the bad about all presidents. And if that's going to cause me someday to be told, sorry, you can't do it, then I'll have to just resign. I've done a lot of years of teaching. I don't, you know, I want to teach, but you know, I'm not going to cave into this kind of censorship, because the state government has no responsibility or right to tell people how to teach their classes, particularly at the university level. But I'm thinking, if I had been in a high school now and I was like 45 years old, what would I do? You know, it's not easy to switch fields and all that. It would be horrifying. I'm glad I'm at, from my personal factor, that I'm not at that age that I have to worry. But I am not caving in, because this is unbelievable censorship, and it's being spread across the country and other states like Texas. And it's got to be fought in the courts. It's got to be stopped. It's very upsetting and disturbing.
So in your case, you work because you like to work. And I think as long as you're capable and want to, I mean, you know, not pinching pennies to the point where you need your salary. And I mean, you certainly can be fully retired, but you like working, you like disseminating your information, and you like the controversy. As we've kind of talked about, if a student of yours were to write a paper saying that Donald Trump was the greatest president or greatest Homo sapiens ever, and it were argued well and presented facts as well as opinions when they're obviously of that nature, you very well could give that person a very good grade. In fact, you would probably look very favorably, knowing that this person doesn't agree with you, but had enough gumption to write the paper and prove his or her points and do it very well. And
I want to point out that I mentioned to my students that basically it's not because I say they can't. Nobody gets below a C. Everybody makes it through. It's not like you can't get through. But basically, and I've said for 50 years I've taught, no matter what course, no matter who the students are, no matter where I've taught, about 20 to 25% get in the A range, about 60 to 65% get B, and about 20% get C. And it's always that way. And it's not because I set it up. It's just the way students are. but I do not mark down for their viewpoints. I mark down on whether they're covering the material and discussing the issues involved. And that's why I talk both sides of every president. I say positives and negatives. But if you want to look at it, that I say something negative about Woodrow Wilson being a white supremacist in office, which he was, well, I'm sorry. It's the truth. And the fact that Jefferson owned lots of slaves, I can't hide it. But they seem to want to change history and change literature, and, you know, I'm talking about the state of Florida, and that is simply reprehensible.
Could that extend to the United States if DeSantis does enter the Oval Office? Do you think he will tone it down, or what do you think could be the end result of that?
I think he wants to whitewash history. I think he wants to whitewash history and get rid of art. Like, what about this case of this? Where is this? Somewhere where they had the Michelangelo David, and they were complaining about it because it showed obviously the body of a male. I mean, some of these parents are off the wall, and religion should not get in the way of public education. Now, in the case of Palm Beach Atlantic, it's Christian University. I'm glad I never taught at a religiously based school because it's just horrible. Because to me, you don't censor information just because it's uncomfortable.
So it remains to be seen, and without a doubt, Ron, this will be a tremendous debating point for the primaries and the elections, especially if we see maybe a more centrist type of Republican running against DeSantis and Donald J. Trump. Now, if
they're the two front runners now, yes.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm seeing is Donald J. Trump appears to be far ahead of DeSantis, but I'm not sure how reliable that is. We've certainly seen polls like this in the past, and look what happens. For example, the Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump election. We see how that turned out. Again, you know, whether or not...
I want to go back. You want to go back about the Republicans and say, in 2007, who was the front runner a year before the election? Rudy Giuliani. Who was the front runner in 2015? Scott Walker. You ever hear about them anymore? Other than, of course, Giuliani being
I was
crazy.
Thinking Giuliani might become president. At that point, he had a good reputation. New York City was cleaned up. Crime went down. And he was thought of a good leader, a very centrist type of Republican. And now he's kind of introduced a lot of controversy. But I guess things do change quite a bit. I remember, Ron, that I thought an upcoming election might be Hillary Clinton versus Rudy Giuliani. And my thought was, I really like both of them, and kind of hard to tell which one I would vote for. Now it seems like I'm back to that premise of vote for the lesser of evils, vote for which one nauseates you the least. I would say.
But imagine Hillary and Rudy Giuliani, instead it ended up being Obama and McCain. It's so how different it turns out to be. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
And Jeb Bush was supposed to move ahead. Look what happened to Jeb Bush.
Yeah, I never really quite know. And McCain, rather moderate Republican. But as we agree, his choice of Sarah Palin as VP probably did him in. That wasn't really the brightest VP choice of all time. I mean,
know what I noticed is now a commentator for MSNBC, John Kasich. And I watched him. And I said, John, I wish you could come back and run, because he's the kind of a Republican I could.
Yeah,
I could
he's likable. I mean, he's an Ohioan. Yeah. Even if I'm not thrilled with the candidate, I certainly like to root for the home team. But he's getting up there in years. And I think he's had it with politics. He kind of wants to enjoy his retirement. Also, I think he's seen what his colleague Mike DeWine has gone through. Wasn't expecting have to deal with so much stuff as governor, and you know, be careful what you wish for. And he kind of got into that, but that's how it goes sometimes. And he got reelected, I guess, hoping that the next term won't be quite as crazy as the first term. But we shall see. Adam here on The Talking Place with Dr. Ron Feinman, our political commentator, author of the blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com. On a bit of a lighter note, Ron, if Donald Trump were to be arrested, he really wouldn't be the first president to be arrested. Ulysses S. Grant, about 150 years ago, was arrested in the nation's capital in 1872 for the very tremendous offense of speeding his horse and carriage.
Yes.
Of course, a very different thing than what's going on with Donald Trump. But, of course, presidents don't drive anymore. I'm not really sure how much they drive after they leave office, but they certainly don't drive when they're in office. But things were a bit different then.
Yeah, it's humorous, by the way, that a black police officer, William West, who had fought in the Civil War, was the police officer who arrested him.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
I guess that's what you might call karma. Sometimes karma bites you in the wrong part of your body, doesn't it? But
yes,
we shall see what happens. And we brought this up before, Ron, and certainly an item of controversy. But as this drags on, it becomes more controversial. Do you still feel we should be supporting the Ukraine, sending money to Ukraine? I think in talking, Ron, and I'm not an expert on this stuff, but I know enough to be dangerous, so to speak. I think people are tired of this virtual blank check to the Ukraine. We have economy issues in the United States. The interest rate just went up another quarter of a point. We see prices. We see supply problems. We got enough issues going on here, yet it seems like we are bowing to every request of the Ukraine. We're not saying that Russia is right, but I'm questioning, does the Ukraine have a negative opinion of us? Is Zelensky just being nice, so to speak, because he knows the United States has deep pockets? That's my personal opinion, as I think you know. I mean, when is this going to end? Should we just keep writing this blank check to them? What's going to be the end result? With tax time, people paying their taxes, I've joked, well, maybe I should just write a check to the Ukraine and just mail it over there, because that's where it seems like my money is going. And I think even people that are great support of this have this concern that it's not going to end and that all our money is going there. So what's your current state of that that issue?
Yeah, I think that Ukraine is as important for the future of stability in the world as Great Britain was in 1940-41. Nobody wanted us to help Britain, and of course we got into World War II. I think if Putin wins and he takes over Ukraine, it's a threat to NATO, and it's also giving a statement to China that they can invade Taiwan and we won't do anything about it. It's isolationism. It didn't work in the 1930s, and it doesn't work now. And actually, the amount of money, it sounds like a lot of money, but in the whole scheme of things, it's not a lot of money. Of course, it's a lot of people giving somebody the money, billions, but it's nothing in a budget like ours. And I think it is a question of national security and support of NATO. And remember that Donald Trump would basically tell NATO to go, you know what, I'm not going to say the word. And so that would be a danger to the whole world system if we were to not be aligned with our 30 NATO powers that are allies. So I completely think that we have to do whatever we have to do to help Ukraine. Hope it will not escalate. But if it does, and Putin invades Poland, which is really supportive of Ukraine, then we're going to be in World War III. I'm sorry to say, but it's unavoidable. And China is also a great threat. I'm worried about both of those nations.
But you can see why this concern comes up, especially with income taxes. And it just seems like this money is being sent to them. And are we sending money to a country that has an unfavorable opinion about the United States, and Zelensky is just buttering up to Joe Biden? And
no, that image of Ukraine is one that Trump promoted. Ukraine is not a negative country toward us at all. That is right-wing propaganda that is pro-Russia. And you got to remember that Trump has always been very favorable toward Putin. So we have to understand that we're caving in to totalitarian governments if we go ahead and say, let Ukraine go. And remember, Ukraine is very large in total territory. That would upend the whole European balance if Ukraine was to lose and have to give up its sovereignty. It can't be allowed to happen. I consider it the same as dealing with Churchill in 1940-41. I think Zelensky is a national hero, an international hero, and he's like the new Winston Churchill. I really think he is, and I think we cannot abandon Ukraine.
But you can see where the concern is that the money is being sent, and this kind of depends upon...
The same people... Same people who talk about money are the same who don't give a damn about people in this country who are not wealthy. These are the wealthy people who just want to make sure they don't have to pay any taxes, including the billionaires, but they don't really care to take care of the issues of education, healthcare, housing, and so many other issues. And the fact that there are many people of all backgrounds who are struggling, but you don't hear these people on the right caring about those people. And I'm still saying that to me, it's something that's a international security crisis that we have to deal with.
I mean, I guess somewhat libertarian view is America first. Call me a nationalist, that's fine. I root for the home team. And you do also, Ron, but you're saying that sometimes we need to root for another team, one that...
America first in 1940-41 would have led us to having Hitler and Japan taking over the whole world. Thank God, unfortunately, that we were attacked at Pearl Harbor. We had to wake ourselves up, as on September 11th, and realize we don't live in a world where we can say, to hell with the world. We have to be involved with the world. That's why I don't think America First works. It didn't then, and it doesn't now. It's part of our story, but it's not the whole story.
And when will this end, though? Do you see a time when we're not sending money to the Ukraine? Can it be resolved, or is this going to go on for 5 or 10 years? And what's going to happen? What'll happen after Putin leaves office? I guess those are some of the questions in the future.
I don't have a crystal ball, but we have to deal with it as it happens. And if it involves having a major war, well, I mean, that's the world scene we're on. It's still for our own national defense. We need to. I don't know. It's a difficult issue. I don't claim to have all the answers. But the answer is not to say, okay, just give up, because then he'll be emboldened and he'll decide to take over some of the former Eastern European allies that are now part of NATO. So I think we're destined to probably have a wider war, unfortunately, and that's scary. But
yeah, that's
I don't
not,
see how we can avoid it.
What? That's not what we want to hear. We don't like war. I mean, it's expensive and it's dangerous.
No, of course not.
We like to think we can just all get along. I know that's a pipe dream, but that's what I'd like to think.
Yeah, but don't you realize that the big companies will love it? They'll make so much money on it.
Yes.
Defense companies.
Yeah, I would say that, but I don't like the idea of war. I mean, I'm a pacifist.
Well, I don't either.
I understand it's sometimes a necessity, but I'm not a fan. We'll put it that way.
Well, I'm a pacifist in a broad sense, but I'm also a realist.
Yeah,
so we have to deal with the world as it is, not what we want it to be.
Yeah, I mean, our views of this particular issue, we have some views in common, but probably maybe a third of it we have in common. And I understand where you're coming from, what you're getting at. And yeah, we're practicalists, if that's a word, but also pacifists. And we'd like to think we could all shake hands and get along, and that's what you and I do. We realize we have differences, but
yes,
we still respect each other. Can that extend
to... Yes, but we're not Russia and the U.S.
Yeah. Can that extend to countries? Well, looks like it can't, but we can always cross our fingers and look at the glass as half full. Now, in your blog, Ron, a few days ago, we bring up again, Ron DeSantis changes his view on the Russian Federation for political survival. So I was kind of surprised when I saw that. So what's going on there? Has he kind of changed his tune and maybe looking to see if that will help him in his presidency? Or what's going on there? Because that was quite a shocking, was a short blog, but it was quite a shocking revelation.
Well, it was shocking that he went ahead and he was saying that he said it's just a territorial dispute, and all the Republican senators, many of the Republican, not the House, the House is crazy, but many of the Republican senators went after him and said that now that is not the answer, and they made it clear that is simply not something that's acceptable to say that it's just a territorial dispute. I'm thankful for Mitch McConnell and Mitt Romney and many others in the Senate. Republicans. I have a list here from the earlier article from March 15th. Mitch McConnell, Mitt Romney, Lindsey Graham, John Cornyn, John Thune, Marco Rubio, Mike Rounds, even Marco Rubio from the same state, Mike Rounds of South Dakota, Kevin Cramer, Roger Wicker, John Kennedy, not the John Kennedy, the lunatic John Kennedy of Louisiana. All these people spoke up and said, this is appeasement. He's acting like Neville Chamberlain, and that's why I'm using that term, Neville Chamberlain. And he came to realize that he was losing support in the base of the Republican Party, many of them anyway, not necessarily the Trump people, but others. So suddenly he changes his view. But I think it's all just self-serving, and I don't think he's trustworthy on foreign affairs. I don't even think he understands the world. He may have a lot of education, but he doesn't know the world. I really think he's someone very much an egotist who thinks he's best qualified based on what he's doing, as I say, to his promotion of taking away the rights of gays, lesbians, transgenders, women, racial minorities, teachers, librarians, medical doctors, even elected prosecutors that he fires. Shouldn't be able to do that. So I think that I think he's not going to be the nominee, but what worries me is I think Trump will be, and there needs to be someone else that comes along who's more acceptable. But I don't know who it is, because Larry Hogan backed out. I think he was probably the best alternative. And I guess John Kasich is not going to run, obviously. There's not too many choices right now. So just got to hope that the Democrats, whether under Biden or someone else, can hold it together and win another term.
So you kind of prefer the wisdom of Joe Biden as long as he's been in government, that he knows what's going on with foreign policy. He was VP under Obama. So he has dipped his toes in the water for quite a while.
He's definitely a foreign policy guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely a foreign policy guy more than most presidents. He is, along with H.W. Bush and Nixon, the three presidents with lots of foreign policy expertise before they came to the White House. Him and Bush, first Bush and also Nixon.
Yeah, well, got just a few minutes left, and I'll try to touch on these things and talk fast, and we'll table the rest for our next presentation. I mentioned interest rates. Prime rate is now 8%. It's certainly gone up quite a bit. Inflation.
Yes.
Some things have calmed down. There are some who believe the housing market has reached its peak. I mean, that also depends upon where you are. What's up with inflation, Ron? That doesn't make Biden look good, obviously. It was an issue with Carter and presidents from a couple generations ago. This will certainly come up in the debates. What is your crystal ball saying about inflation and how interest rates, and how will that affect this upcoming presidential campaign?
Yeah. Okay. Well, inflation is down from what it was. It's like 6% now, not 9%, which is an improvement. But it also affected H.W. Bush when he ran in 1992. It affected Carter a lot in 1980. And it is an issue. But the point is, whether it's one person or another, it's not as if inflation is due to a president. It's due to circumstances of the worldwide economy. And, of course, you become blamed for it, but it's not as if you have a magic potion where you can just make things good. But it's still a long way to the election, and I do think it seems like it is coming down, inflation. It's still too much, and I agree, but I don't think it's going to be a winning issue for the Republicans at the end. And, of course, if they don't indeed pay off or raise the debt limit, which is reckless if they don't, they're going to cause massive economic difficulty, and they're going to get blamed for it because they're out of their mind. Every government has to pay their past debts and raise the debt limit. It always has been that way, whether Republican or Democrat. And for that, and for the small margin in the House to be so reckless is not going to look good for them in the future, in the next election. And I think they're not going to keep their 5-seat majority because it's going to be very hard to do that. So I think it's a mistake on their part, and I hope there'll be some kind of a compromise on that.
I think one thing we do know is the next a set of debates and the election will be a colorful one. It seems like we say that every time, and it just gets colorfuler and colorfuler and a little bit controversialer. I guess that's not a word, but we'll just make up a word, and crazier. But that's all part of the fun, and certainly gives you, Ron, more things to talk about in your classroom, in your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, and of course, your articles that you write periodically for the History News Network.
And I wanted to intervene before we leave to mention, I published an article on March 19th. Will 2024 follow 1912 with a former president running on a third-party ticket? And I talk about the potential of Trump running on a third party if he's not the nominee and how it could really mess up the election like 1912 when Theodore Roosevelt ran as a third-party candidate and ended up second with the Republican president Taft ending up third. So I did write that article just a short time ago, a few days ago.
And we encourage people to read Ron's articles again. Whether or not you agree with him, you will come away learning something and scratching your head and kind of deciding, well, where do I stand on this, especially these very multifaceted issues like the Ukraine and Russia situation and the foreign aid. And, you know, every day we get closer to the next presidential election, and that's going to be a doozy, as my mama would say.
Put it
mildly. Well, Ron, again, thank you again for joining us here on The Talking Place. We encourage people to follow him, Ron Feinman, and The Progressive Professor on Facebook. His Twitter handle, we promise no mean tweets, just informative ones that might make you laugh. Polithist, P-O-L-I-T-H-I-S-T. And of course,
and also History News Network.
And yes,
History News
of course,
Network under my name, Ronald L. Feinman.
If you're at your local library, look up the book about presidential assassinations. Check it out like I did and read it. Write a review about it. You will, again, learn something. It's a good read. And you'll, no doubt, acquire some information you didn't have previously. Take advantage of this, 60, 70, 80 years of experience Ron has teaching and researching.
They remind me of how many years it is.
Yeah, definitely. Knowledge just makes you a better person. Increases your own perspective of the world and lets you, I think, scratch your head enough times and think about how things are going in the world and shape your own opinions. Ron, again, thanks again.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Ron, for joining us here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, broadcasting online via TuneIn and, of course, our esteemed website, WWGH1071.com.